Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you from the weekend commercial news for Saturday and Sunday, September 5th and 6th. This is Labor Day weekend. I hope you all got out and were able to enjoy many of the things that were going on in our communities. We are going to hear about some of them as they made the front page. But note that many of these events have passed. So this is really, in some ways, just a little bittersweet if you hear about something that you would have enjoyed. But I think that we have a big lineup for the Labor Day weekend, so let's see what was in store. Our first and main headline today is busy weekend, two festivals, two parades, and a charity softball game. And then this comes to us as a staff report. There's no shortage of events this weekend in Vermilion County. We have the Hopeston National Sweet Corn Festival taking place all weekend at McFerrin Park. The Sweet Corn Parade is set for 10:30 a.m. on Friday, and free sweet corn will be available from 1:30 to 5 on Friday, and then from noon to 4 on Sunday and Monday. I'm sorry, that was on Saturday. Saturday is also the makeup date for the Mike Stevens Bravest versus the Finest charity softball game at Danville Stadium. Gates opened at 3 with opening ceremonies at 4, and the first of three games began at 5. Admission was free, but donations were taken to be donated to the following charities: Ambucks, Gateway Family Services, the Survivor Resource Center, Vermilion County Child Advocacy Center, and the Williams Care Clinic. Zambrelletti Park in Westville hosted a weekend full of events sponsored by the Westville Lions Club. The main attraction were the bands Slippery When Wet and Neon Rodeo. They performed at 5 p.m. on Saturday. On Monday, the Westville Labor Day Parade was scheduled to begin at 11:30 a.m. Danville was also hosting a Labor Day Parade, kicking off bright and early at 9 a.m. with lineup starting at 7. The parade lineup began at the Hope Unlimited Church parking lot by Walnut Street. The parade route went south on North Vermilion Street, starting at William Street, and ended at Riverfront Plaza at the intersection of North Vermilion and Main. "We picked up the Labor Day parade this year," Rihanna Pierce said during a council meeting. "Our unions weren't able to get together and take it on, so we offered to partner with them and carried on the Labor Day parade. There were 66 entries, and many of them had two cars per entry, so it was a very busy, very full parade." Continuing with events and front page news, the War Museum hosts events this weekend. And this came to us from reporter Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. The Vermilion County War Museum is hosting a few events to commemorate Labor Day this holiday weekend. On Saturday, the museum hosted a free event, Pearl Harbor Day in Vermilion County, at 1. There was also a Rosie the Riveter display, which was presented by Marilyn Smith. Larry Weatherford, the War Museum President and Executive Director, was present to talk about the World War II B-17 pilot William Whitaker display, who was involved with NASA program during the first moon landing era. And Don Smith, a historical presenter, was there to preview a new display under construction featuring two Tuskegee Airmen from Georgetown, Halbert and Harvey Alexander, who trained at the now decommissioned Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul. The two men were also designated as top guns. "They're very famous, but most people around here hardly know about them," Weatherford said. "And men who trained in Rantoul were the first all-black flying unit in history, as the 99th Pursuit Squadron in 1941, during a time when black men faced much racial prejudice in all fields, even the military." Also, Frank Lemenzes will hold a presentation in the updated D-Day room. There, Lemenzes will chat about June 6, 1944, D-Day, while showing corresponding artifacts at the museum. Finally, the Saturday event will end with Bob House talking and showing museum artifacts from the captured enemies in World War II. "Right here is Adolf Hitler's toilet handle," Weatherford said lightheartedly, saying that that helps end the exhibit on a lighter note. "His fingerprints would have been on it. You won't find that anywhere else." Weatherford added, "We don't try to promote the Nazis. We don't promote war. But if we don't know history, the good and the bad, we're bound to repeat it." The weekend festivity started on Friday during Danville's First Friday's event. The museum had a military Jeep on display. Again, lots going on. Our final story on the front page today is titled, "Court Halts Distribution of Ballots Over Appeal." And this comes to us from Tom Davies of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. The Indiana Supreme Court is stopping the distribution of election ballots in six counties while it considers legal arguments over the Republican primary recount that determined challenger Paula Copenhaver defeated State Senator Spencer Deary by a three-vote margin. The court's order, issued Thursday, grants a request from Deary's attorney that no general election ballots go out while the Indiana Recount Commission's actions remain under appeal. The Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments in the case on September 10th, a little more than a week before the September 19th deadline in state law for county election officers to have started mailing out absentee ballots. Early in-person voting starts on October 6th. The order, supported by all five justices, prevents the issuance, transmission, distribution, or use of general election ballots for Indiana State Senate District 23 before a decision is issued in this appeal. Deary, a first-term senator from West Lafayette, emerged from the May primary with a three-vote lead over Copenhaver, who had the endorsement of President Donald Trump because of Deary's vote last year against congressional redistricting. But that lead flipped to Copenhaver last month after the recount commission threw out more challenged ballots for Deary than Copenhaver. The commission's certified totals gave Copenhaver 6,332 votes to Deary's 6,329. Deary's appeal to the Supreme Court argues that six of the tossed ballots that voters cast for him should be counted because missing signatures were the result of election worker omissions rather than anything the voters did. Copenhaver's attorneys maintain that Deary has presented no evidence to support that claim and that it is too late for the courts to intervene because the August 21st certification deadline for this fall's election has passed. The order affects ballots in Fountain, Montgomery, Park, Tippecanoe, Vermilion, and Warren counties in the area between Lafayette and Terre Haute. All or parts of those districts are in the Senate district, or counties are in the Senate district. The court said its order does not prevent county clerks, election boards, and election officials from preparing all other aspects of the ballot by the standard statutory deadlines. The Deary-Copenhaver race is the only one undecided from the primary, in which Trump-endorsed challengers defeated six other incumbent Republican senators targeted over their redistricting votes. The Republican winner will face Democratic West Lafayette Committee Councilman David Sanders and independent candidate Joshua Brandt on the November ballot. In more local news, Jeffries graduates from Northwestern's School of Police Staff and Command. The Danville Police Department is pleased to announce the recent graduation of Lieutenant Jason Jeffries from the School of Police Staff and Command at Northwestern University. Jeffries successfully completed the 22-week Staff and Command program held in Evanston. This program, which was implemented by the Center for Public Safety in 1983, has graduated over 21,000 students both nationally and internationally. The School of Police Staff and Command provides upper-level college instruction in a total of 27 core blocks of instruction and additional optional blocks during each session. The major topics of study include leadership, human resources, employee relations, organizational behavior, applied statistics, planning and policy development, budgeting, and resource allocation. Upon successful completion, students may be awarded a total of 6 units of undergraduate credits from Northwestern. The Center for Public Safety was established at Northwestern University in 1936 with the specific goal of expanding university-based education and training for the law enforcement community. Since its inception, the center has broadened its original objective and now provides a variety of courses and programs in the area of police training, management training, and executive development. Jeffries is the 6th supervisor in the Danville Police Department to graduate from the Northwestern University Center for Public Safety. Our congratulations go out to Lieutenant Chief Jeffries. In more news, U.S. Attorney's Office warns public about phone spoofing scam. And this comes to us as a staff report from Springfield. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of Illinois is alerting the public to recent reports of fraudulent phone calls in which scammers spoof official office telephone numbers in an attempt to deceive and defraud individuals. According to a release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, these callers may claim to be employees of the U.S. Attorney's Office, use the names of real staff members, and pressure individuals with threats or demands for payment. The U.S. Attorney's Office does not request money, personal financial information or sensitive identifying details over the phone. The U.S. Attorney's Office remains steadfast in protecting the public and ensuring individuals are not exploited through impersonation schemes. These scams succeed by casting doubt and fear into their victims, pressuring them to reveal information they would otherwise keep secure. We will not allow these tactics to undermine the trust and safety of our communities, said United States Attorney Gregory M. Gilmore. My office will never stop working to safeguard the citizens of the Central District of Illinois. If you receive a suspicious call, document the name and details the caller provides. Hang up immediately and call the U.S. Attorney's Office directly using the publicly listed numbers. State that you have been a target of a spoofing scam and ask to speak with the individual by name to verify whether the call was legitimate. Anyone who believes they've been targeted by this scam is encouraged to report the incident to the FBI at www.fbi.gov/tips or by calling 1-800-CALL-FBI. That's 1-800-225-5324. There are a couple of more events I'd like to bring to your attention that are in the future that you may want to get on your calendars. Illinois Extension and OSF offer diabetes support. Illinois Extension and OSF Healthcare have joined together for a monthly diabetes support group designed for individuals living with diabetes and their caregivers. These sessions will be held on the second Tuesday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. at the Danville Public Library at 319 North Vermilion Street in Danville. The next session is set for September 8th, and the final session will be September 8th, with the final decision on December 8th. So let me go back for those times again. The sessions are held on the second Tuesday of every month, beginning on September 8th, ending on December 8th, and from 10 to 11 a.m. at the Danville Public Library. Each session will include a short educational comment, an open component, and open discussion where participants may share their experiences, discuss their successes and challenges, and learn from one another. Topics are not preset and will be guided on participant interests and needs. Participants will receive a Smart Meals meal kit from OSF. To learn more or to register, visit go.illinois.edu/diabetesdpl. If you need reasonable accommodation to participate or would like to register over the phone, you can call Rachel Mannon at 217-333-7672. And Rachel's also available at her email at rmannon, R-M-A-N-N-E-N, at illinois.edu. In another community brief, Thompson to speak at Autumn Fields. John Thompson, candidate for Vermilion County Sheriff, will be the guest speaker at Autumn Fields in Tilton on Thursday, September 17th at 2 p.m. John will discuss his vision for the Sheriff's Department and share his law enforcement and other professional experience with attendees. And again, that will be held on Thursday, September 17th at 2 p.m. Candidate John Thompson, candidate for Sheriff of Vermilion County, and this will be at Autumn Fields in Tilton. Continuing with news, for those of you that are enjoying the lower prices gas prices that are often found in Indiana, this headline will be of interest to you. Indiana gas tax suspension continues through October 6th, and this comes to us from Mackenzie Clayman of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Governor Mike Braun suspended Indiana's gasoline usage and excise taxes Thursday, extending his latest energy emergency just in time to avoid a sudden surge in gasoline prices for Labor Day weekend. Motorists would have paid an extra 61 cents per gallon in excise and usage taxes this month had Braun not renewed the emergency order before it expired September 5th. Instead, Hoosiers will see the cheapest gasoline prices in the nation as they travel for Labor Day weekend. The average cost for a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline was $3.45 in Indiana Thursday, far below the national $4.14 per gallon average, according to AAA. Affordability has been a top priority, Braun said. My gas tax suspensions have delivered the least expensive gas in America for Hoosier families. Hoosiers have not paid Indiana's gas and use tax of a 7% sales tax calculated each month, since Braun declared an energy emergency at the start of the Iran war in April. Braun suspended the state's 37-cent excise tax when he renewed the emergency order the following month. Both taxes have been suspended since May. Braun issued a new energy emergency in August, referencing the 2022 Russian invasion of Ukraine and Canadian wildfires, this time to continue the suspension beyond the 120 days permitted by law for the governor to act without legislative approval. Lawmakers returned for their budget writing session in January, but have shown little interest in calling a special legislative session to authorize a gasoline tax suspension. Thursday's renewal means the excise and usage taxes will remain suspended through at least October 6th, though the governor can keep the emergency order in effect through early December. That gets us close enough to a legislative session where we can look at it more seriously, Braun told reporters on Thursday. The Indiana Department of Transportation projects losses from the excise and usage tax suspensions will reach a combined $1.1 billion for state and local road projects if the suspension continues through December 4th. Braun ordered his administration to cover losses to locals through the state highway fund, but he will need legislative approval to tap into the state's growing cash reserves, which are projected to reach $5.2 billion by next summer. We're a little past our halfway mark, so let's take a note at the death notices that were received by 5 p.m. on Friday. We have two. William H. Jenner. William H. Jenner, age 96, of Muskoka, Illinois, passed away on Tuesday, August 25th, at Brightly Senior Living in Muskoka. His visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. on Monday, October 12th, at the Mall Funeral Home in Muskoka, Illinois. There will be a funeral service at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, October 13th at Bethel United Methodist Church in Muskoka, with Pastor Bobby Davis officiating. Military honors will follow the funeral service in the Mall Funeral Home parking lot, and burial will follow the military honors at the Vermilion Grove Cemetery in Vermilion Grove, Illinois. Our second death notice today is Cynthia Kempf. Cynthia Kempf, age 81, passed away on August 29th at her daughter's home in Daholenga, Georgia. We have no further information on any services for Cynthia at this time. And that concludes our reading of our obituaries today. Let's turn our attention to the editorial pages today. We usually do this about right now and when I read. Today's editorial is titled Memories Never Fade. At 7:46 a.m. Central Time on September 11, 2001, staff members of the Commercial News were well into putting together that day's edition. Our press time in those days was 10:30 a.m., so the newspaper could be delivered to vendors by noon. Minutes later, someone noticed a news report on the television that was always on in one corner of the newsroom. Network news showed a commercial airliner, later identified as American Airlines Flight 11, crashing into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. The images were horrifying. Staffers gathered around as we watched the story unfold, putting work on pause until we knew for sure what was happening. We watched as another airliner, United Airlines Flight 175, smashed into the South Tower of the World Trade Center. We saw the panic of people on the ground and listened as television reporters tried to separate facts from rumor. We watched as all of the first responders running toward the burning buildings. Little more than 30 minutes later, American Airlines Flight 77 plunged into the Pentagon. Now the television screen carried tragedies from two locations. We all knew this was not a coincidence. We watched as the North Tower collapsed at 8:59 a.m., creating huge clouds of dust and debris. We saw people running for their lives and even more first responders headed into the chaos. Then the report came just after 9:03 a.m. as news of the crash of United Airlines Flight 93 in a field near Shanksville, PA, came in. The North Tower collapsed at 9:28. We later learned who was responsible, a group of fanatics who sacrificed themselves in the hopes of hurting America. Instead, their actions united the country in a way that few other things had done in a long time. Commercial news staffers put aside their shock and fear and concentrated on their jobs. We published three editions that morning, each with updated information. We didn't learn the full scope of the attack until later. More than 2,750 people died in those attacks, including those brave men and women who didn't run away, but who tried to save as many others as possible. Aside from the passengers on the airliners, the toll was heavy: 343 firefighters, 23 New York City police officers, 37 New York Port Authority police officers, 184 people at the Pentagon, and 40 brave souls who fought the hijackers aboard Flight 93 in the sky over Pennsylvania, causing it to crash before it reached its intended target. America will honor the memories of those who died and those who helped as we mark the 25th anniversary of the attack on September 11th. We all should pause early in the morning, not to remember the attack or the twisted reasoning behind it, but to remember those innocent lives lost and those who put aside their own fears and responded with bravery. Their actions showed why Americans did not stumble after the attacks. Even after 25 years, the memory of that morning stands fresh in the mind of those who watched. We remember. We always will. I bet many of you know where you were the day of that horrible, horrible tragedy. I sure know I do. Let's turn our attention to sports. Hauser's Hail Mary boosts Illinois. This comes to us from Marvin Holman with a Dateline of Champaign. Just when it seemed like the Illinois football team would have a tough opener, a Hail Mary took away all the tension. Illini quarterback Caton Hauser completed a 54-yard pass to Ty Robinson to end the first half, which took a 14-13 Illinois lead to a 21-13 lead at halftime. We had 18 seconds left, and I wasn't sure if we were going to try to run the clock out and go into the half, Hauser said. Coach Bielma and Coach Lunny decided, hey, we're going to go out to try to take a shot at this thing. I threw the ball out, got a big gain, and then we got down to it and thought, all right, let's go out and take a shot. I haven't thrown a Hail Mary in I don't know how long. I saw they had one rusher and everyone deep, and I thought, all right, let's take a shot. I saw a UAB defender have hands on it and just bat at it around, and Ty Robinson made it a great play at the end of the half to come down with it. One of the coolest plays of my career so far. That was awesome. The pass was key as the Illini would go on for a 42-23 win over UAB in the season opener at Gies Memorial Stadium. It was crazy. I'll never forget that, Robinson said. I've been a part of a few Hail Marys, but that was the first successful one. I was going out and I was supposed to be the jumper, so I'm supposed to go get the ball. I went out there, I was ready, and I did my job. The Illini opened with a new scoreboard and lots of fans ready to see what the team was going to do on Thursday night. I want to thank the fans. A home opener on Thursday night, I didn't know exactly how it was going to be, Bielma said. Especially shout out to the students, since we had 10,000 of them out there. When I first got here, I think we had 2,000 to 3,000, and to build it into what it is now, with the energy they brought, I've always been lobbying to call them the Orange Crush. I know that's a basketball thing, but they showed up in good fashion and did a nice job giving us energy, especially in the first half when they came back and it got close. Defensive debut. The game was also a debut for defense coordinator Bobby Houck and his 3-3-5 scheme. While the Illini had successes like Ishmael Conte's 59-yard interception return, players were talking about the 413 yards given up by the defense and things like a late touchdown run with 9 seconds left. It felt great to just play football, trusting my reads and executing the calls. We've been game playing for these guys all week. It was great, and I'm looking forward to making more plays in the future, Conte said. It wasn't a great performance, and we all know that. We'll clean that up, and we know that. That's why we practice. We need to trust our eyes and trust what we practice throughout the week. Clean up some tackling. I felt myself miss some tackles out there tonight, so moving forward, I need to do better with that. Definitely reacting to the different moves. We did okay tonight, but I definitely missed some key plays, and I couldn't have gotten some TFLs and impact plays. We will definitely get that through practice and film, Will Holmes said. We knew what they were going to do for the most part, and we've been studying those guys. We were confident going out there and just playing football. The Illini will stay at the Gies Memorial Stadium next week to take on defending ACC champion Duke. Looking at prep sports a little closer to home, a new foundation. Freshman duo continue to shine for Covington, and this too comes to us from reporter Marvin Holman. Dateline Covington, Indiana. In the Covington volleyball system, it's usually tough for even one freshman to start on the varsity team, but Meredith Wright and Regan Stone Cipher has turned that idea on its ear. The young outside hitters for the Trojans have had a very strong start for the team, but it shouldn't be a surprise, according to head coach Jennifer Sutherland. Regan had an older sister that played for me, and she was always around, Sutherland said. They have good volleyball families, and they put in the work in the off season. They started playing since they were younger, and they have done a great job putting in the extra work to play varsity level. It is going good, and playing with the girls has been so fun, and especially playing with the seniors, Wright said. We have been playing together since first grade, and there's great chemistry, and there's no drama between us. The strong start continued on Thursday with the Trojans beating North Vermilion 25-12, 25-8, and 25-21. Wright had 16 kills and 14 digs, while Stone Cypher had 11 kills and 10 digs. Even with the duo being the only freshman on a team stacked with juniors and seniors, Stone Cypher said it's been easy to come into the team, especially since she's been around the program a long time before this season. In sixth grade, we helped the players with getting ready for sectionals, Stone Cypher said. It's better to be on the team because you get the experience, the different personalities. When we were younger, they didn't really talk to us much, but it was fun being with the older kids because they're more fun and interactive and you understand the game more. Both freshmen have played club volleyball for close to 10 years, which makes the adjustment even easier. They both play at a high level with travel teams in the season, and those teams are like a varsity level of play, Sutherland said. We all have stuff to work on, and they've done a great job of blending in. We lost two seniors from last year, and they were able to come in, fill the spots, and have done a great job for us. We got used to playing in clubs and rotational, so we're familiar with the game, Stone Cypher said. Meredith and I have played for a long time, so the game comes easy for us. In the third set, the Falcons led a couple of times before the Trojans were able to finish the match. Sometimes we have to remind them that we're fully capable of competing with anyone we play, but sometimes we do forget that, North Vermilion coach Hillary Gibson said. They came out ready to go, and it finally clicked that we can battle with them. We're hoping to push it to a fourth set, but we were right there to do that. In other prep scores from around the area, Westville volleyball beats Danville. The Westville volleyball team continued its unbeaten start on Wednesday with a 25-13-25-17 win over Danville. Carly Miller had 10 kills from the Tigers, while Maddie Doggett had 6 kills with 9 digs, and Danica Fox had six assists, and Gwen Bennett had 5 assists. In other scores in volleyball, it was BHRA 2, Villa Grove 0, Oakwood 2, Shiloh 1, Fisher 2, Hoopston Area 0, Arthur Christian 2, Georgetown Ridge Farm 0, Salt Fork 2, Arcola 0, and Park Heritage 3, Seeger 0. In prep girls golf, Seeger wins triangular. The host Patriots beat out Covington and Riverton Park on Thursday at Harrison Hills Golf Course. With Megan Such and Emma Nern each had 51 for Seeger, while Callie Anderson and Paisley Brooks each shot a 59 and Olivia Wolber had a 65. In prep boys tennis, it was Seeger Park 4 and Park Heritage 1, with Preston Hughes and Hayden Rickey each winning their individuals as the Patriots beat the Wolves. In our Thank a Farmer feature this week, we're celebrating the Norman family. Crops and livestock keep the Normans busy. And this is Dateline Seidel. Grant Norman takes a few days off as a farmer of crops like corns and beans, as well as having hogs and cows. He and his children have even show hogs at places like county fairs. Farming can be pretty picturesque at times, Norman said. It can be scenes out of a movie that's a good movie, and then there's scenes of horror movies out there too. At Norman Brothers Farms headquarters, where tractors are rebuilt after fires and age, Norman, the third generation of family farmers, sits and talks about how the field has changed, its challenges, and why he loves the work despite them. People say, well, you do it for fun? Well, we work for fun. That's what we do for fun, he jokes. He's quick to say that the farm doesn't run on his work alone, that his grandfather is still on site most days. He turned 892 in August, and he's here every day, Monday through Saturday, unless he's sick, he said. He still helps a little bit in the field, run an auger cart or drive a truck or whatever. His work ethic is, if you like what you do, you don't ever need to take a vacation. Well, congratulations to the Norman family of Seidel. Thank you, farmers. Well, that just about wraps up our time together today. Let's take a look at our 7-day forecast. Well, we'll only look at it for 5 days. It looks like we are in for plenty of sunshine this week, with Wednesday being our hot in the afternoon of high of 91 day with a possible thunderstorm or two. Monday and Tuesday, we have 80s to look forward to, partly sunny, a little bit warmer on Tuesday with a high of 89. That rain on Wednesday will cool us off, and we're back into the low 80s for Thursday and Friday. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News. Have a great week.